Gone South has been a podcast about crime in the American South. But for our new season, we're widening the lens. Follow and listen to Gone South Season 5, available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your shows.
We're back with more Inside the Clubhouse with Bruce Levine and David Haugh on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, presented by Bet Rivers Sportsbook.
And welcome back into Inside the Clubhouse. He's Bruce. I'm Mike, in for David today. Mike Esposito, glad to be here, and hope your holiday weekend is off to a great start. Should be a beautiful holiday weekend, so get on out and enjoy it. And one place you can enjoy it tonight, in fact, is at Wrigley Field. The Cubs with a night game tonight, facing the Cincinnati Reds and trying to get back in the win column after losing to the Reds 9-0 yesterday. And Bruce, as we wait for Boog Shambi to hop on, one of the moves that was made as Kyle Hendricks was activated, Nick Madrigal sent down to Iowa. And not that it was necessarily a surprise, but Madrigal getting down there to get, as Rossi said, some regular at-bats as he was in and out of the Cubs lineup here at the major league level.
Yeah, well, for me, it was a bit of a shock. I mean, did he have a position on the Cubs coming out of spring training? No. Was he the centerpiece along with Cody Hoyer for the trade 2 years ago with the White Sox for Kimbrel? Yes, he was. A number four pick overall in the draft not too many years ago. Spent very little time in the minor leagues. Was looked at, Mike, as the starting second baseman for many years,
right,
and a top of the order hitter, and then injury before he was traded. You know, if people remember back when he was traded, he was on the IL at the time. He already had a season-ending injury at the time when he was traded. So he had torn up his leg, and he was on the IL until spring training last year. And now coming back this year after, trying to find himself last year, he ended up having no position with the Horner being moved over to second base with Swanson coming in as a shortstop. So from all of that, there was no real position. And I give Madrigal an awful lot of credit for going over to a position that he'd never played before and starting to improve and show that he could play that position at the major league level. I think there's still quality left in a very young player, Nick Madrigal, to be a major league player. The problem is, and we're going to get Boog's opinion on this as well, Mike, right now, is that when you look at Madrigal, he's got one tool that's major league caliber. The rest is all good, average, but nothing really extraordinary. He puts the bat on the ball. In this era, and as we move in and welcome our good friend John Boog Shambi to the show from Marquee Sports Network and ESPN Chicago, from ESPN, I would ask you, Boog, where do you think the career for Nick Madrigal might be going from this point on?
Yeah, it's hard. I mean, I think you summed it up, but I think it's especially challenging. I will say that your point about he adjusted to third, I thought he did a pretty nice job at third. If I were totally honest, I think he did a better job than I thought he would. I thought he played, an average-ish third base. You know, the fundamental problem is that, as you mentioned, the one tool that he has is the hit tool. So for him to establish himself as having plus value as a player, he's probably got to hit about 315. And in today's game, that is so hard. You're talking about the major league average is 247. In the playoffs last year, guys hit 211. It's harder to hit now than it has ever been. And the thing that he has to do if he's going to establish value as get hits, it's really challenging.
Yeah, Boog, and speaking of the hit tool, and we appreciate you jumping on with us, Christopher Morel has certainly demonstrated that hit tool since coming up from Iowa a few weeks ago, and lots of home runs and really a great on-base streak too. But he's another guy positionally that he can play a lot of different places, but you know, where does he end up eventually? I mean, he's got a lot of versatility, but he doesn't seem to have a natural position.
I don't know the answer to that. I think the part that's so, you know, curious is that when you look at speed, he would be in the conversation as fastest guy on the team. When you look at arm, he probably is the best arm on the team. And when you look at power, you know, like, who's hitting it farther than Christopher Morel and has the type of juice, he's right there in the conversation. And yet, even still, as, you know, twitchy and as athletic as he is, you know, right now he's kind of a DH. I think, there, you know, again, we've got to be careful, or I should say I've got to be careful. He's 23, and he's playing his age 23 season right now. So I hope that he's able to learn a spot. He is most comfortable up the middle, I would say, is the way the Cubs people feel. That's where he feels most comfortable. You know, third base seems like a fit, but the arm slot is kind of all over the place. You know, he basically at Triple A was playing third and center. So I don't know. I don't have a good feel for that. There are tools there. As long as he hits, you know, we can push off the answer to that question for a while.
Our good buddy John Bugshambi, our guest on Inside the Clubhouse this Saturday. He's Mike, I'm Bruce. It's Inside the Clubhouse. 52 weeks out of the year on the score. John, you're being kind there. I mean, he cannot play the corner outfield very well right now, and it's not for a lack of work. We see him working every day. You're out there early, just like I am, before the games, watching this guy incessantly work at his trade, not just hitting, but playing all these positions. So when people talk about, this guy could be the next Ben Zobrist, well, he's the furthest thing I know from Ben Zobrist as far as playing positions right now. And it's not a lack of trying. It's just, he's just not polished there. I think you put it well. He's a DH right now. And I guess to further the conversation along, Boog, people just aren't comfortable with 23-year-old DHs who are athletic, right?
Right. Yeah, I mean, I think you bring up a great point in terms of the positional versatility. You know, you've got to be able to do it. I mean, Zobrist was, you know, a plus guy at spots. Obviously, you know, he came up as a shortstop, so that certainly helps. Christopher did as well. But you've got to be able to, you know, do average to above average at a spot or two in order for it to really, you know, work. I mean, I would even maintain that I'm not sure in hindsight about Chris Bryant's positional versatility, right? Like, he was okay at, I mean, not better than Morel, but you want guys that can move around, but they've got to be able to move around and be, you know, at least net neutral or assets, and it's challenging. But again, the Cubs are in a spot right now where there's still development left, and if he's going to hit a home run every, you know, 7-8 at-bats, it's going to be okay.
Talking to Bugshambi, Marquee Sports Network, our guest here on Inside the Clubhouse on 670 The Score. And, Boog, Bruce and I started the show. We were talking about kind of the seesaw season so far. Started off hot, have cooled a little bit, even recently. The rough road trip, come home, you win the first two Mets games, feeling a lot better, and then they've lost two since then. So, in terms of the big picture in the whole season, you know, the numbers in terms of, you know, run differential and the metrics say that the Cubs' record should be better than the 22-28 that it is. Jed Hoyer talked about that the other day. What do you see as you watch this team? You're there every day. You call the games every day. Through 50 games, and Memorial Day is always a tent pole in the baseball season in terms of, you know, where is this team at and where are they going? What do you see big picture when you look at this Cubs team?
I've been surprised and happily so by the offense. Like, if this team continues to lead the National League in on-base percentage, they're going to, you know, offensively, they're going to be okay. I think that the starting pitching will be good, and I love their ability to catch it. When they're healthy with Swanson, Horner, and Bellinger up the middle, it's been fun to watch, and they've been, you know, an upper third in the majors defensive type team, maybe even, inside of seven or something like that. The bullpen is a big question, and I just don't know, you know, the answers. I'm not sure where they come from, but it's got to be better. I think that's a problem for them. So I think the one other part is, you know, you sit there and dissect games and stretches. The one part of this season that disappointed me, I know that there are going to be good parts and bad parts, but I would say that the road trip to Miami and D.C. going 1-6 is, right. In that spot against those teams, I just think you need two more wins there. And as funny as it sounds, you know, two more wins sitting here today, and you're looking at the team a little bit differently. You know, two or three more wins on that trip. It's really the only spot where I feel like you have legitimate, you know, beef with what's taking place performance-wise. So I don't know going forward. I will say I don't think the division's that good. I don't think that the league is that good. You got the Braves and the Dodgers. I don't know. Last time I checked, I think the Diamondbacks are the next best record. So it's not an especially good league. But they're in a spot right now where you got the Rays, and then you go on a 10-game trip out west, and you got to be careful.
John, when you look at David Ross's situation, for the first time since he started to manage, social media and regular media have him under the microscope more than he ever has been. And I guess that begins with the fact that there were and are expectations for the Cubs being better now. That said, have you ever seen a manager look good and not be on the hot seat when a bullpen doesn't function well?
Yeah, I mean, my thought always, when you don't like the choices that the manager is making in the bullpen, more often than not, he doesn't have great choices, right? I mean, so
right.
I think that they're almost always tied together when you look at what's happening, you know, how you're evaluating a manager. It's just not in 2023. It's just not the place that I go in terms of manipulating stuff, you know, and I've changed, right? I understand, you know, like even lineups and stuff like that. I mean, yes, you can, I would want every day to maximize, you know, to maximize the lineup, but I think that even, you know, should this guy hit here or that guy hit there, like, that's not it. For this team, it's a bigger picture stuff. He doesn't have guys in the bullpen that he feels like, I have nine outs down there. Like, I have Tepera, Chafin, and Kimbrel. That's nine outs in my pocket, so the game is shorter. You know, I have Robertson and Martin down there. I have six, seven outs in my pocket. He just doesn't have that right now. I'm not sure, you know, in terms of going forward where they get, you know, the improvement from the bullpen. It's a path that will reveal itself when it does, but I don't know quite what it is right now.
A few more minutes with John Bukchambi from Marquee Sports Network, Cubs play-by-play man on TV. And not that you could say that it's a massive game here as we sit on May 27th, but I know big things were expected from Jameson Taillon. They gave him a big contract, and we've seen the track record, right? I mean, he was great with the Yankees last year, but he's gotten off to a difficult start here with the Cubs. What, if anything, have you noticed about Taillon, and how do you see this going as we go forward in this season, Boog?
I know people hate this, but I do feel like he's a guy that's had some, you know, some bad luck. Like, in terms of when his injury took place, coming off his best start against the Dodgers, so that's one. And then he definitely has had some bad ball in play, you know, non-hard hit bad luck. He's also left some pitches, you know, over the plate, but I guess I'm still sort of in wait and see mode for him, and I feel pretty good that it'll get better because of that track record. So that's kind of my take on him. The performance needs to improve, period. But I'm not in an overly worried state, you know. You just gotta. It's like what happened with Justin Steele yesterday. You know, he's just not going to go out there and fire up, you know, a 2 or a sub-2 type performance every single start. There's going to be a clunker here and there. I think Jameson Taillon will get things back in a better direction. That's my guess.
I have a question about broadcasting that I'm going to ask you next, but please give us some information about Project Main Street this year, ALS project, you know, for your great friend, your dear departed friend, Tim Sheehy, and how people can get involved, okay?
So, I mean, Lou Gehrig Day is coming up June 2nd. The Cubs will be on the road. If you're a Cub fan or a White Sox fan, if you go to you can go to marqueesportsnetwork.com/ALS or Obvious Shirts. And we're selling End ALS for Lou shirts. If you're a White Sox fan, we got it in, you know, black, white, and a little bit of silver. You know, we got it obviously in Cubs colors. You have it in all 30 teams' colors. The proceeds go to benefit people living with ALS. And then on June 15th against the Pirates, the Cubs are nice enough to do at home an ALS Lou Gehrig Day. So hopefully, you know, I'd ask people to, you know, buy their T-shirts. They're $29. Again, proceeds, every dollar goes to help someone living with the disease. It's pretty amazing in 2023 we have an incurable disease, but we do with Lou Gehrig disease. So, as you mentioned, losing Tim in 2007, it's a cause that's really personal to me. And every little bit helps. You can go to projectmainstreet.org. To buy the T-shirts, so multiple spaces to buy the T-shirts on my Twitter page, on my Instagram page. And if you want to donate, you can donate. $5 helps, $10 helps, $3 helps, whatever. So that's kind of it, but we need, you know, people to help. That's the biggest thing.
So I have my question, and I know Mike has one more for you as well, but my question is versatility as a broadcaster. The broadcast that you do on Marquee Sports Network, along with JD and other assorted, analysts, is one thing. The broadcast you do on ESPN and Sunday Night Baseball, quite another. And it's almost, for me, Boog, it's almost listening to two different broadcasters, because the cadence and the way that you go about preparing is probably the same, but the cadence and just the way you go about it, obviously two different vehicles, TV and radio. But to you, are you with two different broadcasters having to do radio on Sunday nights and then again during the week television for Cubs baseball?
I got to tell you, I would say I think it's pretty on the money. You know, on radio, the technical component is the priority. People cannot see what is going on, and I need to, as efficiently as possible, but as descriptively as possible, explain what is happening on the field. And that is the number one priority. So the mechanics, the technical part of it, are the crucial part of it. A ground ball up the middle is, you know, ground ball up the middle, Swanson to his left, reaches, fields, spins, throws, got him at first. On TV, it literally can be up the middle, Swanson, oh, nice play, one out. You can do it a million different ways. But it's because you can see it, you're trying to engage your analyst. It's a little more of a conversation. So, but yes, I am absolutely different. I mean, look, you guys know my personality is to play. That is naturally who I am, and I certainly do it on Sundays. But I can't play at the expense of people not knowing what's happening, whereas on TV they can see it, so I can play a little more.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And Boog, as we let you go, last thing from us. I look at the National League, and you're right, Arizona, outside of the Dodgers and Braves, Arizona is the next best record, 29-22, so there's a lot of parity. But as I look at the Central specifically, I see a bunch of teams that are pretty good, that are probably going to finish somewhere between 75 and maybe 88, 90 wins, somewhere in there. I see this going down to the wire. I see a bunch of teams still being active in it, including the Cubs, and I don't see anyone running away with this division at all.
I don't think anyone's running away with the division. I don't. I just, I don't know that a team's capable of it. You know, for the Cardinals, I just don't know that they're going to pitch enough. So it's one where, you know, back, you circle back to the Cubs, you know, if you can get yourself back on the right track, gosh, you should be playing games that mean something, you know, starting in September. So that's the part that's exciting. But I completely agree, you know, with the Central. And, I mean, heck, in the overall, in the National League, aside from the Dodgers and the Braves, you know, there are wins to be had out there. It's not as if there are tons of teams that are markedly better than the Cubs.
Boog, it's a pleasure. Mike and I appreciate your time very much. I enjoy the Boog Sciambi very much on Marquee Sports Network. I enjoy the guy that does Sunday Night Baseball as well, even though they're two different broadcasters. To me, that's still amazing that people can be great at doing both. You are one of those guys. All the best of luck with the Project Main Street. We will be in support of you. Have a great day, and we'll see you at the ballpark.
Thanks, you guys. Thanks so much for having me on. I really appreciate it.
That's Boog Sciambi, Marquee Sports Network. And Bruce, you mentioned it. You hit it on the headies. And I love the broadcasting thing that you raised with him, too, because it is. It's two different things, the TV versus radio, the TV call versus the radio call. And I know, you know, Cubs fans and actually White Sox fans, too, with Lenny over there, you're spoiled with these broadcasts, right? I mean, Hall of Famers on both sides of town. I mean, Pat officially going in this year, and I'm just praising Len too. But I mean, the skill and the greatness on the broadcast side that we have in both radio booths is pretty awesome.
Yeah, it really is. And again, there's no greater conversations among baseball fans than about their broadcasters, and usually it doesn't come up until the teams aren't good, okay? When they're not good or going bad, then the conversation goes to the broadcaster saying, "Boy, did you hear what Boog said? Did you hear what Lenny said? Did you hear what Stone said? Did you hear what JD said?" So from all of that, and Pat and Ron and Zach, they get an awful lot of it as well on the score doing all the Cub games here. So From that perspective, it's one of the hardest jobs in the world to be really good at, Mike. I mean, really good doing a talk show 162 times a year on radio, and 140 to 150 on television, being interesting, provocative, the people's voice of summer, especially when the team's playing a blowout game like yesterday. Try to keep people's attention for 3 hours when your team's blown out in the first few innings. Not the easiest thing to do.
Yeah, that's some of their best work. Honestly, that's when it gets a little funny in there. You get some good laughs going with Pat and Ron. And I say this very humbly. I'm thrilled that I get to fill in there doing pre and post. And Pat makes it look so easy. And we know it's very difficult, but it's quite a treat. And great to listen to Pat as always. We need to take a timeout, Bruce. When we come back, we will be joined by Cubs catcher Yan Gomes as we roll on here and Inside the Clubhouse. He's Bruce Levine. I'm Mike Esposito in for David Haw today, and we'll talk to Yan Gomes next here on Inside the Clubhouse on The Score.
And Yan was a catcher that always met his pitcher at the foul line and walked in the dugout with his arm around him, talking about probably just what had happened and what was going to happen. So Yan is always thinking about what he needs to do for that pitcher and how am I going to get through this next inning. And I think pitchers respect that. When they know that you know more about hitters than they do and their stuff and they can trust you.
That's Joe Girardi, Cubs analyst, former Cubs or former Major League skipper and World Series champion. Some words of high praise for Yan Gomes. And Bruce, we look forward to chatting next with our guest on Inside the Clubhouse as we head on out to the Score Hotline presented by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book.
And we bring in Yan Gomes, nice enough to spend some of his Saturday morning off with us on Inside the Clubhouse. Yan, thank you so much for joining us. And I guess my first question to you would be, when you're running a staff of starting pitchers like this, how much credit should go to the catcher? How much should go to the pitcher? Or should we just look at it as a combination that has to be in sync for it to work?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question, but the way to look at it already is if somebody wants to take the credit, then that's already a bad way to look at it. I feel like if we collectively together, I mean, it doesn't just go with myself and Tucker or just the pitchers. I mean, there's a lot of people that go on behind that essay or contribution that goes into it. So if anything, it's a spread of credit that needs to be passed around. And as we say, good teams like to, we work together. And to get through a whole season, we need a lot of people involved.
Yeah, and certainly some kind words and some strong words from Joe Girardi that we heard coming in. And I know as a longtime major league catcher, that's something you take pride in is guiding your pitching staff, knowing what's coming, helping them work through the lineup and work through the game. Has that always been the case for you as a catcher, as a young guy coming up? Were you always hyper aware of the defensive responsibilities and knowing the other team's lineup?
Yeah, I think I was. I've always enjoyed playing that game with whatever it is, whether manipulating a lineup, focusing on your pitcher's strengths, focusing on the hitter's weaknesses, whatever that goes into it. But I was taught at a very young age or young time in my major league career, and I've said this before: if we can get we can get our team and our pitchers through a game and we win, I've done my job. So I've definitely focused on that. I remember really early on in my career, a call that I made where, I didn't have much background to it and I paid for it. So I took a little bit more of an ownership of learning the game more and studying a little bit more to where that would never happen. Not that I would never make a wrong call again, but at least I prepared myself for it.
Cubs catcher Yan Gomes, nice enough to spend some time on Inside the Clubhouse with Mike Esposito and Bruce Levine today. And Yan, here's one question I haven't asked you and I haven't heard talked about. Before you signed with the Cubs, you were coming in, you're a veteran catcher. You looked at as one of the better catchers in the game, but you're going into a situation where there's a two-time All-Star, eventually three-time All-Star. That's the regular catcher. What questions did you have to ask Jed Hoyer? And what questions did he have to ask you in order for this to feel good about signing with the Cubs?
Well, the question they had to ask me was like, hey, would you take a two-year deal to come play for us? I said, yes. No, I mean, I wish it was as simple as that, but so I think it was just mainly I'm at the point of my career place where I feel like we can win. It's a good respected place. So when the Cubs called, I mean, to me already it was a no-brainer. From the negotiating and aspect of that, we were in that lockout stage where those conversations have to happen fast. I feel like it was a more of a conversation of, am I going to get a chance to play some decent amount of games? I don't, you know, I feel like I can contribute, and whatever they want out of me, I was gonna be ready for it. And obviously, you know, knowing, you know, that Willie was here, and you know, pending free agency and all that, I felt like if I gained enough respect, I could get a, you know, a chance to play more the next year, which, you know, which would be this year. But mainly, it was coming to a place where I knew I was going to enjoy, and yeah, I mean, that's kind of like what went down.
Talking with Yan Gomes on Inside the Clubhouse, and Yan, we do hear a lot, and you know, it's known around baseball, right? Wrigley Field, a great place to play. But for you as a catcher in particular, coming in and having a guy who was a catcher in the big leagues not so long ago, who is now your manager, I would imagine there's lots of very catcher-centric, you guys probably get each other pretty well in terms of communication. Do I have that right?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I feel like that... not to lack any kind of respect that we all have for Ross, but I feel like that part of, like, yes, he's my manager and I'm his, you know, one of his players. I feel like that part, it's become easier to have that kind of get past it and have that communication of just like in-game adjustments and in-game conversations that we can have. I feel like Rossi, you know, he mentions it. It's not so much like you can come to me at any time and have that kind of conversation. And so that we can talk about it, and he's going to tell me the truth, and that's the same way I am with everything. So, yeah, we definitely have a very easy line of communication, and yeah, and that definitely played a big part. Wanting to play for a guy that I respected a lot, and still do.
So, PitchCom, okay, great. PitchCom. How has PitchCom changed the life and the dynamic between pitcher and catcher? And I'll preface that, Yan, by saying there's a couple pitchers on the White Sox that call their own games now. PitchCom's there, but they're comfortable calling their own. Some of them didn't get off to the greatest start in the world, and they're starting to mix and match with the catcher input a little bit more. How does PitchCom change things for you and your pitchers, and what are your thoughts of it in the infancy here over the last couple of years?
I definitely was a little bit hard-headed about it at first. I felt like, you know, this game, you know, I wanted to keep it the old school traditional way, and but once we were used to it, and guys, I actually love it. You know, I think it's super, super easy, super convenient. The only thing sometimes is, like, you know, hearing when the crowd gets loud, but yeah, I thoroughly enjoy it. I recommend it to everyone, and now it's almost kind of weird when somebody doesn't use it, which I'm pretty sure all of our guys do. So yeah, I think it's very easy. There's different ways of playing around with it to where you're really relaying the message that you want to.
Few more minutes here with Yan Gomes from the Cubs. The Cubs catcher joins us on Inside the Clubhouse. And Yan, Bruce and I were talking earlier about the great starting pitching you guys have gotten for the most part all season. We've seen it this week. You had both Smiley and Stroman getting things done. And, you know, how would you, from the catcher's perspective, describe that? We know we had, you know, the Smiley with the near-perfect game and the way that ended. But it's been a great season for the overall picture for the Cubs starting pitching.
Yeah, no, absolutely. We talked a little bit about that during spring training coming into. We had a lot of phenomenal pieces that were being added and some experience being added. Just another year of more, you know, from a comfort level for Smiley. And then we had, you know, guys like, you know, Steele, who's was taking a big step forward and matured, you know, tremendously in this game. And I feel like from a good, you know, good teams always have good pitching. And then there's the starting pitchers, you know, we're going to rely a lot on them, and they're doing a tremendous job. And they're, you know, just feeding off of each other. I know it's a long season still ahead, and I think these guys have been a tremendous chance to win every game.
My last question for you, and Mike and I really appreciate your time today, Jan. What would be a perfect number of games for Jan Gomes to catch? Having said, prior to answering that question, that your health is good and that you are feeling strong throughout a season, which is ridiculous, I know, because no catcher does. But, I mean, is there a number that pops into your head of saying, yeah, it's 120, yeah, it's 100, no, it's 75? I mean, is it, with good health being, given, what would be a good number for you?
I mean, that question can be answered in many different ways. I would love to, I joked around with Carter Hawkins this offseason. I think he mentioned Jan can't catch every game. And I told him, I was like, no, you're right. I cannot. I can't. But, I don't have a specific number. I think we've put ourselves in a good situation to where we can have two guys out there that they can control a pitching staff and they respect us. But, I mean, for me, it's however many Rossi wants me to play. I really don't have exact number. Obviously, if it's anything over 100, that's definitely a goal that I've always, going into a season, even last season. I feel like I knew the position that I was going to be in, but I prepared myself to catch as many games as I could and, still treating myself as if I was the starting guy. But, I take a lot of pride keeping my body healthy and ready to go. So, and credit, we have a tremendous training staff and strength coaches that keep us ready to go. And I rely a lot on them with the increased load of playing. And, I've always done that my whole career.
Do you have any idea what the most games caught is ever for a catcher? I'll give you a hint. He played for the Chicago Cubs in 1968.
Well, I'm assuming close to 162.
Randy Hundley was the Cubs catcher for many years, a great catcher, great individual, still a good friend, lives in the Chicago area. Mm-hmm. He caught 160 games in 1968. And he started the year at 190 pounds, and at the end of the year, he weighed 170 pounds. He started with wearing a belt and was wearing suspenders the rest of the year. So I don't know from your perspective how you internalize that.
That's incredible. I feel like we can even say, from position players and stuff like that, playing that many games is already a lot. But that's incredible. Much respect to that. I don't think I could ever do that or I've ever been given a chance to do that. I'd love to chat with him about that. That's insane. What a backup job that would have been, huh? Whoever the backup was.
Two games.
4 years of big league time. That could have been a tremendous job there.
Yeah, it was. A lot of pom-poms and getting coffee in that job, for sure. Yeah. Hey, Jan, thank you so much for taking some time out. It's a pleasure having you on. It's a pleasure seeing you go about your job as well and seeing you in the clubhouse. Thanks so much for taking some time out today.
Absolutely, Bruce. Thank you, Mike. You guys are awesome, man. Thank you guys for having me.
Thanks, Jan. That's Jan Gomes, Cubs catcher. Always great to talk to. And wow, I knew it was Randy Hundley. I did not realize it was 160 games, Bruce, and that is something that you'll never see. You'll never see that again.
We're gonna have Randy on, hopefully over the next few weeks, just to talk about what I consider the Cal Ripken feat of one season, a catcher catching 160 ball games.
That'd be amazing. Well, and thanks again to Jan Gomes for joining us. He's great to talk to. It's good to get his insight on the Cubs pitching staff, and we'll certainly look for him in the lineup today as the Cubs take on the Reds. It's a night game tonight at Wrigley at 6:15. We have one more segment for us, Bruce, and we will come back and do that. We'll finish up with your calls and texts on both White Sox and Cubs, so stick around. It's Inside the Clubhouse. Bruce Levine, Mike Esposito in for David Haw today. You've got Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
last segment from us here on Inside the Clubhouse on 670 The Score. Bruce Levine, Mike Esposito in for David Haugh today. Quick update for you on our games today. The White Sox take on the Tigers. Jesse Schultens this afternoon against Michael Lorenzen. And the Cubs, it is a night game right here on The Score. Zach's pregame at 5:40, first pitch at 6:15. Jameson Taillon against the Reds, Brandon Williamson. And Bruce, I'll take us right back where we started this show. As we look at both of these teams that have seesawed through the first few months of the season, are either one of these playoff teams? And it's a great question that I don't know that anyone has a complete answer for. And I'm almost leaning White Sox more at this point just because of how their expectations were higher. I think overall they have a better opportunity, and I think they play in a weaker division. That's my 30,000 foot view of this season as we sit here on Memorial Day weekend.
Well, both central divisions, you can say a couple things about. Are they weaker, or are they more? Is there more parity in those divisions? In other words, are the best teams in the central? And again, in the American League, it's hard to define right now. But are the Cardinals, even though they floundered to begin the year, are the Brewers and the Cardinals as good as the Dodgers or the Braves? I think the Braves are in their own airspace at this point as being such a well-rounded team and good at so many areas, pitching, defense, offense, one of the elite teams. They remain that for a number of years. And Dodgers are a tick down from a team that won 111 games last year, Mike, but they're still a very good team. Yep. So I think parity is what the term you used a little earlier in the show. A lot of parity in baseball. You take the American League East, which is a monster, okay?
Yep.
Boston Red Sox plus 500 team are right there with Toronto near the basement. Okay, those are teams that would be leading most of the divisions in baseball and by far. So that's a monster. You look at Tampa, they've been playing like one of those teams that's going to win 110 games. But you're looking at the balanced schedule and Major League Baseball in general. I think whether it's parity or mediocrity, I think it's great for the game because there's probably a lot of teams like the White Sox, a lot of teams like the Cardinals that are going to be up there competing for a division title. And you're going to see more cities and more teams being involved in August and September when the NFL comes around and starts taking fans away from baseball. You're going to see a lot more cities probably involved with their fans still paying attention to baseball.
Yeah, just to put it into perspective, Bruce, and you hit it right on the head. Boston is 10 games behind the Rays at 27-24. That is the exact same record that Milwaukee has, and they are in first place in the Central. So it's a tale of two divisions right there. And yeah, I know, and listen, from firsthand Cubs experience right here in town, I'm excited that this year, barring craziness, that we're going to have meaningful Cubs baseball games in August and September. Last year, they were struggling. You knew they were not going to be in contention at the end of last year. This year, I think, certainly on both sides of town, whether it's Cubs or White Sox, the expectation is you will have meaningful, exciting baseball games in September. And really, that's what the fan bases are looking for. And that's, I know, what the teams are looking for, is to get that chance in the playoffs.
Well, there wasn't that enthusiasm for the White Sox a week or 10 days ago, Mike.
No.
Most Sox fans that call in inside the clubhouse and, talk to our great hosts during the week, they were talking about, well, when are the White Sox going to start selling off? When is Giolito traded? Do you consider trading someone like Tim Anderson? Are you okay moving Grandal? These questions a week or 10 days later, you're not going to hear much of that. The White Sox are firmly back in this race, whether they're playing last place teams or not. They're winning baseball games and playing better ball. Mike, we have a lot of people to thank. Cesar Perez did a tremendous job for us as our producer today. Of course, we thank John Boog Shambi from Marquee Sports Network, who joined us, Scott Fitzsednik from NBC Sports Chicago, and our last guest, catcher Yan Gomes. Mike, it's always fun sitting in with you. David will be back next week, but have a great week. Happy and safe Memorial Day. And, of course, we turn it over to our good friend Steve Rosenblum.
Absolutely, Bruce. Always a pleasure to sit in. And as you mentioned, David Haub will be back next week. This has been Inside the Clubhouse on the Score. Coming up next, though, you'll want to stick around. 3 hours of fun with our buddy Steve Rosenblum. That's next. Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score.
The Second World War is the largest event in human history.
A 20-part series with Tom Hanks.
No part of the globe was untouched. No life unchanged.
Experience the ultimate account of World War II.
Every single person had a story. These are the stories that make us who we are.
Listen to World War II with Tom Hanks on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.